It's 5 o'clock in Pirate Country, and it's time to get pumped up with the P-Man. Hit the door and hit the road. 94.3 The Game is going to get you home, and the P-Man's not holding back.
Yes! Yes! Pirates win! Pirates win!
Bring on the Patrick Johnson Show on 94.3 The Game.
Holy mackerel! Oh, my goodness!
The flagship station of the ECU Pirates.
Okay, hello, hello, hello. Welcome in. Patrick Johnson with you live from the Working Man's Beach where it's blowing a gale.
Going live.
Yeah.
Going live.
We are. Well, the Rep Pilkington producing. Nice to have you with us here. East Carolina over NC State. They get the season sweep as ECU will pick up their 32nd win in their first 40 games.
How about them Pirates, baby?
How about them Pirates, baby, as the ECU Pirates find themselves with a season sweep of their in-state rival in a game that was just a hell of a game. Pirates out early, NC State, home run from AMAC, so the people that like that sort of thing and got to see it. And then you had the Pirates come back after the Pack took the 4-2 lead. Excellent outing by Connor Norby. Ethan Norby. I knew I'd said Connor. Excellent outing by Ethan Norby. Solid third to the seventh, 4 1/3. Excellent stuff. He has emerged as the guy that is the X factor out of the Pirate bullpen. We're going to talk to Mike Mullis about that game, have some audio. Pilk, he's always been one of my favorite players is the star man, Jacob Starling. What he did might be one of the great ECU performances for an athlete coming back into the, well, just period, a great performance. I mean, first time a cycle's been hit for in more than a decade. But to come back off an injury and do that is pretty special stuff. I only would compare it maybe to, if we're talking baseball, well, I just, the only thing I could really compare it to is a couple of years ago when ECU won the game against Cincinnati and rallied in basketball, the first game after Jeff Charles' untimely demise, and those players who were there when all of that went down, the basketball players really were galvanized by it and played hard and got the win. Kind of a different, you know, apples to orange comparison there, but I mean, I'm just kind of something that was special. That's what I'm trying to get at here. It was very, very special, I thought. That's the only comparison I could make. I'm sure there's others, but that to me, what Jacob Starling did was pretty well. And he got the two toughest parts of it done early as well. I mean, what a performance.
It was wonderful. The only thing I could compare it to would maybe be beating Miami at Carter Finley after the hurricane and everything that Eastern North Carolina had been through. But it was phenomenal, and especially with an oblique injury. You know, that's something that really hinders your ability to torque your torso at all. Couldn't imagine swinging a bat, throwing the ball from second base. And like you said, to start out with the hardest one of them all, with the triple, which the umpire was doing everything he could, it seemed like, to call him out right there. But clearly, right, AMAC dropped the ball. And he had a triple there and then home run. And honestly, I thought the single was going to be a double. I was listening because I was back here, but it sounded like he hit it pretty good. I think the kid just made a good play to cut off the ball and hold him to a single and then wraps it up, obviously, with the double. And then they finally took him out. And I think he was hurting a little bit, but he seemed in good spirits this morning when we talked to him.
He was pretty worn out, glad he's doing well. I'm sure he's a little sore this morning, but what a gamer. The Gavin Williams performance in the Super Regional at Vandy, that stands out. Now, I know the Pirates lost that one, but I mean, it just stands out as a great individual baseball performance that comes to mind. Okay, plenty to talk about with baseball. We even had a streaker. It was Bodysuit Man, or was it?
He was just in a jersey. He was a drunk. Yeah, that's the thing. So we were talking about this earlier.
Don't sue us.
I was talking to somebody earlier. I can't remember who it was. I think it was Igo before the show. It's like, what do we call these people? Because I was always told a streak is somebody who's butt naked.
Right. Or if they're in the bodysuit, like Costanza, bodysuit man.
Yeah.
This guy was not bodysuit man, though.
No, he was just like in a jersey and blue jeans or cargo shorts or something.
You know what? I know what we could call him. an idiot.
And there's that.
That's what he is. An idiot.
Yeah.
That's what he is. A moron.
Hey, shout out to the grounds crew, man. Did you see that kid making the tackle? I'm not sure what that kid's name is.
Sign him up.
I know.
Sign him up, Mike Houston. Sign him
that
up.
That was a wonderful tackle. Big. And then Joey Perry and Drew Steele really hauling good. Him off. That was awesome.
I think those guys may have got a kick out of that.
I think they did.
I think they may have enjoyed that a little bit. So we'll come back to that. We'll have Mullis on bottom of the hour. Pilk, a lot of news in college football as it pertains to NIL and paying players. We start with FedEx, and they're right there in Memphis. They announced the deal that they're going to give the University of Memphis for their NIL a contribution of $25 million. It's going to be $5 million a year over the next 5 years. Now, first of all, that's ungodly money to go into an NIL. I mean, that's mind-boggling. But FedEx, obviously an international conglomerate, can do that. Pilk, I would still say this about $5 million a year, $25 million, whatever. Memphis basketball will still be on the bubble because Penny's going to coach him.
That was good. That wasn't even a pun. You did that like it's a pun. I mean, that's just true.
It's good. It's good. I got to give myself credit on that one. But, I mean, that's what we're competing with, ladies and gentlemen. This is going to center around football and men's basketball. Women's basketball is in there as well, some additional women's sports. But, I mean, this is a massive contribution, $25 million. Who could do that for East Carolina? Mr. Beast. We talked about that briefly this morning, and, you know, I guess YouTube and Mr. Beast and the university level are about to do something. I don't know if he's a sports fan. Apparently, Jimmy's not. But, I mean, you don't know till you ask. Maybe he could get YouTube to do something. Or Twitter, now that he's buddies with Elon Musk. X. Vincent Kennedy McMahon, he's $2 billion liquid right now. He sold a bunch of his stock in Endeavor and TKO, which owns the WWE now and the UFC. It might be a little bit of dirty money. Vinnie Mac's got some legal issues right now. Innocent till proven guilty. But that's what you're up against. And it is a tough road to hoe. More on things in the G5 in a moment, because word comes out today. I saw my guy Randy Phillips tweet this out or post it on Facebook. I don't think Randy has X or Twitter, but he's got Facebook like a lot of the olds. Texas A&M lays off a number of high-level staffers in preparation for paying players. Trev Alberts used to be on CTV or college television, worked with Tom Hart. Trev would come by our pregame show all those years ago, and then, of course, got into being an AD, was actually at the D2 level at Nebraska. Now he's at A&M. Trev's a good guy. First major move when arriving as the new Aggies AD was to lay off a number of senior staff members. High-level staffers.
Wait, Alberts laid off. I thought the university could have no hand in NIL.
Well, hang on. Alberts laid off more than a dozen members of the Aggies athletic department, most of them high-ranking members with multiple decades of service. The number two ranking member of athletics was cut. A two-time A&M graduate was let go. This is all in anticipation of being able to pay players in the NIL. Alberts estimated direct payments to athletes could be an annual $15 to $20 million line item on the budget. There's also the House versus NCAA case seeking back pay and damages to past athletes that were barred from the payments today's athletes currently participate in. Jeez Louise, what are we doing? So again, with the idea that universities are going to pay players, and I'm not saying, Pilk, they're going to pay them right now because the university can't dole out the NIL money, haha. But I mean, that's where that's, and that's what the new president of the NCAA said he wanted to do. Saw this story as well today as well, and Philip, I'm anxious to see how you feel about it. And all new, of course, we have the expanded college football playoff this year, right? 12 participants, less controversy. Comes to fruition this fall. Automatic bid to the five highest-rated conference champs. Group of five programs seem to be practically assured one berth. You know, there's some fantasy bookers that think, oh, they could get two. So now, apparently, power brokers from college football's middle tier. Boy, isn't that kind of a bit of a irony in that statement. An oxymoron, in a sense. Power brokers from college football's middle tier seek to ensure viability of their teams and programs beyond this arrangement. A group of five playoff is being bantied about. CBS Sports reporting the group of five playoff model has been, in part, by former Tennessee Volunteers head coach Derek Dooley, I guess presented, and has financial backing from private equity firms. What? Here's an idea. Why don't you get the private equity firms to kick in some money to the NIL of these institutions? Jeez. So there you go. That's on the board. The Big Ten and the SEC are set to receive, under this new CFP model, $22 million per school. The ACC and the Big 12 each gain $12 million per school. $1.8 million to G5 programs. Article goes on to talk about how there's been success at the group of five level. One coach saying, forget not making the playoff. We may not have a program if we don't figure out and find out how we all stay alive. There's potential iterations of this G5 playoff. Financial backing, as we mentioned, has already been discussed. I don't know how I feel about this, Pilk. I mean, I guess it's inevitable. You've got to do something. People like postseason games, but I mean, this would be a real test to how, you know, college football is the number two most popular sport. This would be a real test to how popular postseason football and college football would be. Would people watch this? And if it brings more money, why not? But I mean, you have teams turning down going to the NIT. I don't know. I'm really sort of conflicted on it. I understand the need for it, but I don't know if I like it.
Yeah, it's weird. I think if you're going to have two championships,
but we're in a weird time.
We are.
We're in a weird time.
If you're going to have two championships, though, it's not that the group of five needs to have their own, because you're just becoming pretty much FCS football at this point. It's just it's like above FCS. You're a middle ground. What just needs to happen is the top 40 schools, whatever, you know them, break off, create their own thing, and let these guys be played by the TV networks, not by the universities, because then you've got to deal with all the Title IX crap. But they need to be employees of the TV networks that are broadcasting the games, allow them to have their own thing, and then at the every sport but football level, go back to the way the conferences are supposed to be, because that will get the big-time schools money, but it'll save everybody else money, because there's no reason that North Texas and East Carolina should be in the same conference. Why are we flying girls tennis to Denton, Texas? Well, look, now go back to the old conferences.
No reason why Stanford needs to be coming to Winston-Salem to play a game against Wake Forest.
Yeah, there's not. Go back to the old conferences in every sport but football. Let football, the top teams, break off and have their thing and just be done with it. Part of the reason this guy's saying we need to stay afloat, how are we going to stay afloat? Well, what's costing money is all this travel. Teams stayed afloat back in the 40s because you took a bus everywhere.
You took a train.
Yeah.
You left on Tuesday to play on Saturday.
But the colleges were next to each other, or in the next state over.
Well, so the other part of that, though, Pilk, is I don't know. like I said, it's weird times. And when you see something like FedEx kicking into one of those G5 programs, Memphis, $25 million, it is tough to compete out there. And that's why what's being done in a lot of cases with what Cliff Godwin's doing, what Mike Houston has done, what Mike Swartz is trying to do to a degree, what Kim McNeil has done is pretty amazing. Pretty amazing. Hey, we're on the eve of our concert on the Common, which is coming up. Embers are going to open it up for us this year out at the Greenville Toyota Amphitheater, Town Common in Greenville. We're going to have some great food trucks, some great drink options for you. Anita's Mexican Restaurant, the Burp Wagon from Christie's Euro Pub.
Ooh.
These are the food trucks. Kona Ice, Travelin' Tom's Coffee, The Rock from Rock Springs, Williams Catering, Burgers, Dogs, Chicken Sandwiches, Carolina Eagle Distributing with Budweiser, Mick Ultra, Draft Craft Beer, Cider, Wine Options. This is all tomorrow, free. Tickets, you can enter to get tickets to a couple of concerts. The Doobie Brothers on July 31st at the Creek, and then Styx and Foreigner August 21st at the Creek in Raleigh. So, the Embers tomorrow. Craig Woolard, our great colleague and friend here, and the Embers. We'll come back. We'll hear from Starling after his cycle-hitting performance last night. Have a few other Pirate notes for you when we come back on the Patrick Johnson Show.
Taking the rage out of your drive home.
You just cut me off! But it's no big deal.
Patrick Johnson on 94.3 The Game and the new IBX Media app.
Okay, a week from tomorrow, we told you about Concert on the Common tomorrow, and we'll talk to Mark Miller. What did his Sixers do against the Knicks the other night? I know you know.
They blew it. Blew it late.
They did?
Yeah, Mark's not in a good mood. He came in and said, is Joe here? And I said, no. He goes, good. I don't want to see any Knicks fans today. Told him to stay at home.
Right, because Joey Football is a big Knicks fan.
He's from New York.
He is. Love Joey Football. Love Mark. Award-winning Mark Miller will be with us tomorrow as well. As well as the reporter, is it Amanda Kristovich from Front Office Sports? Is that her name, Amanda Kristovich?
Yeah, I think that's how you say her last name.
Okay, but it is Amanda, right?
Yeah.
Okay, I just saw the text, so you would think I'd remember that, but... She is going to be with us. You know, they've ordered mediation essentially between the ACC and Florida State. So they've done some reporting on that. We want to get some facts. We found somebody to talk with. Amanda is a really credible journalist. So we'll talk to her tomorrow during the show as well. So a lot to get to then. Still Mike Mullis to come today talking about last night. Parker Byrd is in New York City as we begin our quasi-pirate report here. Let me find the deets on this. He is in New York. His dad, Jeff, his youngest sister, they're in NYC. And they're catching a Yankee game tonight. Apparently they saw Hamilton while they were there. Now you want to know why they're there, right? Apparently Parker is going to film a segment with Good Morning America. And according to Parker's mom, it will air tomorrow on GMA3 on ABC. In other words, on WCTI 12. They have a segment or a show that airs, I guess, now after like the midday news from 1 to 2 on WCTI. That's another hour or another version of Good Morning America. That's why they call it GMA, because it's not America in two time zones, at least at that time. From 1:10 to 1:15, apparently, this segment on Parker Byrd's going to air tomorrow on GMA3. That'll be on WCTI 12 locally in the market, somewhere between 1:10 and 1:15. So just set your DVR to record the show. And they are filming that clip with Parker Byrd. That's awesome. Great stuff there for Parker. Other baseball news, of course, the Pirates, had something done for the first time in 14 years that had not been done, and that was Jacob Starling hitting for the cycle in the 10-6 win against NC State. record crowd of over 6,050. Not as many that were there for the regional. Ha ha, wink, wink. But a record crowd still nonetheless for those heads that were counted. By the way, the legend of the super regional crowd grows. Like, you know, it's kind of like historical. Of it's like Wilt's 100-point game and people who are 57 say they were there.
It's like the Immaculate Reception. All the people that talked about seeing it, but like it was blacked out within 60 miles of Three River Stadium.
Right.
You had to listen to it on the radio.
When it happened.
Yeah.
They were there when it happened.
Yeah.
But that's the growing legend of that. A lot of people, but not everybody that says they were there. Come on. Pirates sweep the series from NC State. Let's hear what Jacob Starling had to say. He was asked, did he ever hit for the cycle before?
I have not. I got close last year, and the guy robbed my home run. So definitely cool to get that checked off.
Cliff Godwin in Cut 2 talks about the return of Jacob Starling.
I didn't even know he hit for the cycle, to be honest with you. Yesterday at practice, I knew he was itching, and I was like, hey, man, yeah, promise me you won't hurt yourself. And, of course, his growing injury was getting tired there at the end, so I knew he couldn't run. I told him, hey, man, if you can get one more at bat, and, you know, we'll pinch run Nate Crispin for you, and then he can go out and play defense. But he's worked his tail off rehabbing with Logan Rupnow, our trainer, and Kevin Youngs. I'm just so proud of him because he's stayed positive for the most part. And, you know, to be a senior and be injured, it hasn't been easy for him.
Back to Jacob Starling, who talked about the home run that he unleashed.
Yeah, I was just trying to, you know, do something to get the crowd fired up, get some momentum on our side. And I got a good swing on the ball, and the wind definitely helped me.
Starman on why the offense had sustained success against the Woofies.
Man, we just make pitchers work. I mean, we get them tired, you know, fouling off pitches, taking close pitches for balls. And, you know, when we get that pitch that we like, we capitalize on it.
And he discussed those deep counts.
Especially with the starter, like whenever you can get him out before the fifth inning, it just destroys their bullpen. And, you know, that's why we've been so successful.
And then Jacob Starling on his rehab from the oblique injury.
Yeah, I mean, it was a slow process for sure. And just, you know, with what I was dealing with, you can't really do much. But as soon as I was able to hit, I was hitting. As soon as I was able to take around balls, I was doing that. And then, you know, today everything just worked out and I was able to play.
Cliff Godwin on the atmosphere, he said it was regional-like.
Hey, it was awesome. It was a regional atmosphere for sure. And just so happy I can coach at my alma mater where the place is packed like this, because there's only one place that were 6,000 people at on a Tuesday night, and that was in Greenville, North Carolina.
There you go. And the seventh time this year that the Pirates have drawn over 5,000 people to a game. They'll go to Memphis this weekend where there may be seven people at the game.
Memphis is so bad. Well, hopefully they'll have used some of this $25 million. But they, do you know that they can only do one ESPN Plus broadcast at a time total? So, like, our Saturday baseball game is not going to be on TV. And we're also there in softball this weekend. Only the Saturday game will be on TV because they can't do Friday and Sunday because baseball will be on Friday and Sunday. But they got all this FedEx money or so they claim.
Well, that'll make people happy that baseball will at least be on twice. But speaking of softball, thanks for bringing that up, Pilk. Congrats to my guy Shane Winkler. ECU softball knocked off an in-state ACC foe. Two-run bomb from Morgan Johnson, who is just slapping the ball out of the park right now. ECU defeated North Carolina 6-4 in the People's Republic of Chapel Hill. Logan Sutton, a home run of her own for the Pirates. They defeated the Tar Heels in back-to-back seasons for the first time since 2003. ECU track and field's Sydney McMillan, my apologies, Coach Kraft. Sydney McMillan is named the American Athletic Conference's Track Athlete of the Week. She shattered the program's 100-meter hurdles record at Wake Forest Invitational on Friday and then broke it the next day at the Aggie Classic that Saturday. It's the 28th time best time in the NCAA this year, 14th best in the East Region, first in the AAC. So congratulations to Miss McMillan, as Sydney McMillan gets a deserved honor. Good year for track and field. All right, Mike Mullis is itching to get on Pilk. We'll do that right now. Throw it to Pilk, and we'll have him do a 94.3 The Game sports update and Pirate report. And then Mike Mullis will join us. And if we have time today, an awkward prayer. If not, we'll do it tomorrow, but I'm hoping we'll have time to do it today. An awkward prayer at a sports press conference. Here's Pilk.
Thanks, P-Man. Starting in Pirate Athletics last night, the baseball team defeated NC State by a score of 10-6. And big thanks to Jacob Starlin, who hit for the cycle in his first game back from oblique injury. And he talked about his first career cycle.
I've not. I got close last year, and the guy robbed my home run. So definitely cool to get that checked off.
The Pirates will be at Memphis this weekend. Reminder that those games are all Central Time Zone games, so they will start at 7-5-2 instead of the normal 6-4-1. All three games can be heard right here on 94.3 The Game with our guy Scott Rogers. It was a big night last night for the softball team as well, who defeated the Tar Heels of Chapel Hill 6-4. They will be back in action this weekend as they also travel to Memphis to take on the Tigers. It was announced earlier today that the Heisman Trust will return the 2015 Heisman Trophy to Reggie Bush. They said this is due to an enormous change in the landscape of college athletics. Bush had his Heisman taken away in June of 2010 after an investigation showed that he had illegally received cash and gifts while being an amateur athlete. NC State forward Muhammad Diarra has declared for the 2024 NBA draft. Diarra says that he will focus 100% on the draft and professional options. There's some live MLB going on right now from around the country. O's currently up on the Angels, 1-0 in the third, and in the bottom of the fourth, the Mets are up 2-0 on the San Francisco Giants. That'll do it for your 94.3 The Game Sports Flash update and Pirate Report. On the other side of this timeout, we will... Oh, Patrick's wanting me to go back to him. What's up, Patrick?
Forgot to mention something.
Oh,
Rico Watkins entered the portal.
Oh.
Rico Watkins.
It's cornerback who I've never heard of entered the portal.
Was Rico Watkins... Wasn't that the guy's name in Coming to America? That was Randy Watkins. Never mind. With Sexual Chocolate. Yeah.
Some guy only Igo's heard of has entered the portal.
He could walk in with a shirt that said, "Hello, my name is Rico Watkins," and I'd still have no idea who.
But he's in the portal. He's a Pirate cornerback. Sorry, I forgot to put that in there. Thanks for calling me out, Patrick.
He's in the portal. I forgot to mention it in my roundup. And I looked down on my list because I was making some notes. And I Rico Watkins. And I thought, was it Randy Watkins? No, it was Rico. Randy's in Coming to America.
Ow! Well, that will do it. Now that Patrick has wrapped it up, that will do it for our 94.3 Game Sports Flash Update and Pirate Report. Mike Mullis will join us on the other side to talk a little Pirate baseball as they beat NC State last night. Wolfie's down.
Hey there, Pirate baseball fans.
We have you covered with all the ECU news and beyond that you need for the drive home. The Patrick Johnson Show on 94.3 The Game.
Mike Mullis, rave reviews for his performance last night on ESPN Plus. Did a great job of analyzing and breaking down the games. Even worked in a Wheat Swamp shout-out as I was going back and watching the game today, as I was working yesterday and then traveling back to the work at Man's Beach and was relying on Pilk and Scooter to give me updates. Mike joins us now. Mully, how are you?
Good, buddy. How are you?
Doing well. Man, I the only kind of individual effort I can think of that just leaps immediately to mind without really sitting around and pondering it, especially for baseball, would be the Gavin Williams outing, which he ultimately, the Pirates ultimately lost at Vandy in the Super a couple years ago. That was a mano-a-mano pitching matchup. This might be the best player performance, especially considering Starling was coming off an injury, that I've seen. You've seen a lot more ECU baseball than I have, though, and a lot more baseball, and I can't think of anything that leaps to mind from an individual perspective.
You know, PJ, it's funny that you say that, because as you're making your build up there to Star, I didn't know if you were going to say Starling or Riley Johnson. And I'll say
true.
That.
Yeah.
obviously what Starling did was beyond impressive for that game, and a cycle is one of those feats in sport that is just a rarity. But man, what Riley Johnson has done and did last night and means to this team. Look, we saw him drop a very difficult diving effort last night, and it was a surprise because Riley Johnson, you just expect him to make every play that he breaks on. I think, yes, what Jacob Starling did was awesome, and it was an incredible shot in the arm and one of those kind of momentum-building events as it relates to the rest of the season. But, man, Riley Johnson has just been the man all year and absolutely no different last night.
Anytime Riley Johnson leaves his feet, dives, goes against the wall, does any, you worry. You're just so scared for that shoulder. I mean, what he's doing physically is remarkable.
Yeah, you know, and what's funny is we as fans get scared, but clearly Riley Johnson has no fear as it relates to laying out. Or, I mean, we saw him head first into third base against the third baseman for NC State, Makarevich, which is a big unit. I mean, that's big train, little train type of collision there, potentially collision. And as I'm seeing that play develop, I'm going, man, this ain't going to be good. And, he manages to kind of knock the ball loose, depending on, what your stance on it is. But ultimately ruled safe for the triple. We saw him lay out. It's just he plays with reckless abandon for a guy that has everything in the world to be concerned about, truly medically, as it relates to both of those medically repaired shoulders, but are now facing additional medical repair.
Mike Mullis with this baseball analyst, baseball coach. He joins us here on the Patrick Johnson Show. Midweek's with Mully this week, talking about the big win over NC State last night. All right, we'll get into some more individual superlatives in just a moment, Mully, but when you look at this victory, how does this set up East Carolina for the next several weeks and ultimately on Selection Monday on Memorial Day?
I can tell you that the coaching staff has said, hey, guys, incredible win, great effort, fans were awesome. Now we got to shift our focus to Memphis. The Pirates are now, they put themselves in a position, PJ, where it's not about just regional hosting. It's about being a top eight and being a national seed. And in order for the Pirates to achieve that goal, to get a super regional opportunity back in Greenville, they've got a lot of work to do, and that work is not only the big marquee, kind of big-name midweek efforts like we saw last night, but this three-game series at Memphis and the effort that they're going to have to put forth in order to overtake UTSA in the conference. So, I mean, they've got everything in the world to play for, and I'm going to tell you, as a coach and a former player, it's a whole lot better. It's a whole lot more fun to play under these circumstances than it is where you're going, we're going to finish second in the conference, or even if it was a foregone conclusion at this point that you were going to wrap up the conference, it's nice to have something to play for. I mean, if you and I go play golf, I at least want to play for, a dollar a hole or something, because it's just more fun in the pure sense of competition to have something to play for.
You'd lose your ass, Mullis, just so you know. You'd lose it.
Well, and that's okay.
Patrick hadn't picked up a golf club in 20 years.
I know. I haven't played in forever. I haven't played in the pitching last night. Ethan Norby just outstanding in his long relief. But you had Richie. You had Beal. Just really good stuff. Groller was fantastic at the end. That was – Cliff Godwin kind of talked about the better team last night. I certainly think with the way the pitching performed, in large part thanks to Norby, collectively, the way the pitching performed was a huge deal.
Yeah, it certainly didn't go the way Richie or Bill would have wanted it to go in their outings, but their buddies picked them up, and the bullpen definitely answered the call and was was really good, being Norby and Growers. So, I mean, you know, the nice part is, you know, yeah, the game was quote-unquote at hand. At least it felt that way going into the state half, offensive half of the ninth. But at the same time, we've already seen, you know, we saw just early in the game three home runs at inning. And, you know, we've seen, State comes in with nearly 60 home runs on the season. Clark LeClaire was playing pretty small last night with the wind out to right. So anything's still, you know, at hand. But the job Grohler did, I mean, you know, his warm-up pitches in the ninth left me a little concerned. He was a little bit all over the place, and you could tell he was, you know, he was jacked. But as soon as the hitter got in the box, man, he settled right in and, you know, went to doing what he does. And, you know, he's not going to beat you with overpowering stuff. He's going to, you know, kind of nibble and bite and spin the breaking ball. And, man, he was really good. And again, another, you know, shot in the arm, if you will, that really bodes well for the Pirates down the road.
When you talk about the postseason, you talk about pitching, you have Yesavage. You're going to be in a great position with him as it stands right now, leading things off or in a game one of, say, a super, however it plays out. You've got Root, who seems to have pitched through, maybe not being the sharpest at times. He's got a little bit of a bulldog in him. And now you've got Lunsford Chinkman and then Norby. Do you kind of, especially if you do get to a super, and I know, I know there's a lot of baseball to be played. I hear you loud and clear on that. I know you got to get through a regional first. But does that, can you get through and get two victories at a super with that as your pitching, or do you need a little more consistency from a few more guys to feel really, really good?
Well, you know, I think Jake Hunter is another guy that you know, gives me the kind of warm and fuzzies when he's out there. Now, you know, if Grohler can repeat, that's a guy, you know, all of a sudden you look at having five or six options to get you through a regional. And then, yeah, absolutely. I mean, I would take our Friday and Saturday night guy against anybody in the country. It's been the concern of what happens on the back end, but, you know, hopefully we're seeing that kind of rectify itself. But yeah, in answer to your question, I think your Savage and Root do give you enough. And I can assure you, no team in the country wants to face those two. I was really impressed. You know, Root gives up the seven and gets knocked around there. And I mean, it happened in a blink of an eye. But then he comes back out, settles in, and was pretty good. So, you know, that might be the thing. If we get the Root that pitched against Carolina, he's going to be a guy that's going to be very, very difficult to beat. So, long answer to a short question. Yeah, I think those guys do give you enough.
Mike Mullis is with us here. Pirates will head to Memphis, which has a new coach that had success at Southeast Louisiana, I believe. And Cliff Godwin told us their pitching coach is married to an ECU girl. So there you go. There's a note for you, Scooter. But, Molly, when you go to Memphis, I mean, you're coming off 6,000 people. It's a big-time atmosphere, and there might be 400 people in the – there might be 100 people in the stands at Memphis. How do you – again, you got something to play for, so I hear you on that, but how do you stay – that has to be a letdown. I mean, it just has to be.
I mean, obviously the crowd won't be there and the atmosphere, but it goes back. I mean, you've got a senior-laden team. You got Jacob Starling back. You got so much to play for that I'll promise you this, they continue to hold serve and play themselves into a national seed, or even if it ends up being, you know, a regional host, it makes this trip to Memphis worth if there's nobody in the stands, right? I mean, it's just, You got to go play them. You got to go beat them. Hey, you're going to get, you know, some decent barbecue. And, yeah, I mean, you know, there's some positives. You got to dig for them. But at the end of the day, you know, the job is go down there and find a way to win all three, if possible, in worst-case scenario, win the series and keep the baton, you know, passing. But, I'm going to be watching that series, obviously, but at the same time, I'm going to be paying a lot of attention to UTSA and kind of seeing what else shakes out around the conference.
Right.
The thing with Memphis, too, PJ, to this point, is they have hurt some feelings. This is not a team that's just going to – they don't know that they're supposed to lose. And they're, you know, they have upset some folks already this year. So it's, yeah, it's, they're all big. They're all big. But then again, they just, the Pirates have so much to play for. Those guys have to be super pumped and excited. And I would say the effort by the staff to focus them should be a very, very simple one.
Mike Mullis was a catcher because he started out where he was the only guy that could pitch. His buddy was the only guy that could pitch, and they were both the only guys that could catch each other. So that's how Mully became a catcher. So you watch that position with a very watchful eye, Mully. Will Coxon might be the best guy at handling the bat right now for the Pirates in the lineup. Give us your assessment of the Will Coxon season to date, and do you think he's made some strides behind the plate defensively?
You know, I think we've seen Will Coxon really, really good, both offensively and defensively at times. And we've seen him where he kind of things maybe speed up on him or gets away from him a little bit. But again, a guy that's been around the program a long time. He is certainly a guy. He kind of has a swing similar to Riley Johnson. For a guy that has the pop he has, a ton of moving parts to his swing, but he's just so big and strong that we see him do what he did last night with another home run against State, two on the year. So, he's obviously a big part of where they're going. I think the more interesting situation now, again, I keep using this same term, but I don't know another one, the shot in the arm, number three is, you got Cam Clutch that all of a sudden – has become Cam Clutch again.
Yeah.
And you got McChrystal as a bat off the bench, along with Kobe Wallace as a bat off the bench, Luke Nowak as a bat off the bench. I mean, yeah. the depth is impressive.
Mike, there was a guy, I don't know if we'd call him a streaker because he was clothed. He wasn't in a bodysuit, so we can't call him bodysuit man. A stormer? Is that what a stormer? Is that what I would call him an idiot?
Well,
but a stormer, I guess.
I have mentioned, and had people ask me about the streaker, and then the disclaimer statement is always, well, he didn't have, he had his clothes on. I don't know. I know that if we go back to the song about the streak, I think that was
right.
Definitely in that he was, sans clothing. But I still think if you're going to do that, clothed, I still think you just get like a JV level streaking effort.
Right.
And not that any of us, I don't think, wanted to see him, raw, but
we're not asking for that.
No, that was part of the festivities last night. But I mean, what an idiot.
A good producer, Pilk, would have Ray Stevens, the streak, queued up.
I know, that's what I was in the process of pulling up. Don't worry.
All right, Mully. Good stuff, my man. Thank you very much. Always a treat to talk to you. You and I will be paired together in a couple weeks. I think maybe 2 weeks from today for a telecast, so I'm excited about that. Yeah. Get your back ready. You got to carry me.
Well, no, we'll be fine. I look forward to it.
We'll have fun. All right. Hey, Mully, good stuff. Nice to speak to you, my friend, and we'll talk soon.
Talk to you very soon.
There he goes, the great Mike Mullis. Did a fabulous job on the telecast last night. All right, let's hear it, Pilk. And he ain't wearing no clothes. Well, yes, they call him. Well, he was last night. Well. All right. If we have time, a prayer gone bad or wild free agency in college sports. Be back.
Hey, folks, this is Coach Logan.
And now, the stunning conclusion of the show. It's the P-Man here on 94.3 The Game.
I wanted to play this thing from the announcement of the new field at the Bears. I don't know if we're going to have time because this free agency in the college athletics is crazy. We saw Stiles. Now, he didn't go directly from UNC to NC State in basketball, but he did go between those two rivals, Dontrezz Stiles from Kinston. Another unthinkable transfer in the world of college basketball, Roddy Gale Jr., former Ohio State guard, transferred to?
I guess Michigan.
Yeah. And the guy can play. I mean, he's a double-figure scorer, rebounds well for a guard. Good player for the Buckeyes last season, four-star transfer. Or four-star prospect, excuse me. Transfer prospect. They're doing stars for the prospects now? Wow. So there you go. Went to the Wolverines over Duke, Gonzaga, Tennessee, Alabama, Georgia, and several other schools. Isn't this just strange?
Alabama!
Slowing the uptake. Isn't this just bizarre? And then, what's the football one I sent you, Pilk?
Some guy was
in the break?
He was at SC, then he went to UCLA, and now he's going back to SC. And if they either one of those teams actually had fans this day and time, people would care because those schools historically hate each other. But I don't know the last time the Rose Bowl had more than like 10,000 people in it.
Well, not for that game.
Well, yeah. They have for the Rose Bowl game, but I mean a regular season.
Right, the Rose Bowl game, yes. But I mean, what the hell are we doing? I mean, this is free agency run. And it's like you and I were talking about in our text chain for the show. It's not like you can multi-year deal these guys. I mean, these are one-year deals with free agency in college. It's hard to fathom, especially with rivals. It's just
they got to do something.
Losing a lot of the fabric. Something's got to be because we're losing a lot of the fabric.
The whole point of this is
on this G5 playoff.
Yeah, the whole point of this NIL stuff was so that Coach Logan wouldn't get in trouble for buying a kid a coat. That was what this was supposed to fix.
Right, but it's gotten way out of hand. All right, thanks to Mike Mullis. We'll be with you tomorrow. Mark Miller will join us, and Amanda Kristovich from Front Office Sports. Thanks to Philip the Ref Pilkington. See you in the morning on Talk of the Town, and then back here 5 o'clock tomorrow, live.
Do it live!
Tomorrow.